Introduce our main speaker for this evening, Norma M. from Long Beach.
Good evening. My name's Norma. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank Joe and Larry for asking me here tonight, and it's great to see my friend Rosie, and I'd like to thank Soso for doing the drive with me tonight, and it is an honor and a privilege to be asked to speak at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety date, it's March 27th of 1989. And I also want to welcome all the newcomers to Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to let you know that it works good, and it works slow, right? Everything I'm going to say here tonight is my opinion and my opinion only. I don't know if this is the way my life went down, but it's the way I see it. You can tell I'm a Mexican, right? And I'm of the Mexican variety that my family had parties Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And they didn't buy six packs or cases of beer. They bought kegs of beer. And they used to put it in the bathtub with those big blocks of ice and those chunks of salt. And I believe I was born with the disease of alcoholism. I also believe I was born a liar, a cheat, and a manipulator because it comes so natural to me. So when my family was having those parties, they thought it was cute to give us all a glass of beer. And I would go from relative to relative to get that beer. I love keg beer. And I'd sneak into the bathroom and try to pump beer and pump nothing but foam beer. I love foam beer. I'm 4 years old, okay? I'm 4 years old. And the first feeling I ever had at that age, is I felt unloved, unwanted, and discarded. You see, I'm the baby of the family, and I have an older sister, and she always got to sleep with my mother. And I remember I used to sleep in a little walk-in closet, and I remember I used to wake up and cry and yearn for my mother. I never understood why I couldn't sleep with my mother. The truth of the matter is I went to bed. That's why I didn't get to sleep. But when you're 4 years old, you don't know that's the reason. I just felt rejected and not loved. My mother was an alcoholic. I was battered a lot. I'm also a battered child. But let me tell you what kind of kid I was. When I was a kid, we used to live behind my grandmother's house. And they didn't let us have soda, potato chips, or candy. They said it was bad for your hair, bad for your teeth. My grandmother always had a 2-pound box of See's candy in the refrigerator. So when nobody was around, I'd sneak in there and slam that chocolate in my face. And then my mother would show up and she'd say, Norma, did you eat that chocolate? And I'd say, no. She'd grab me by the arm and start giving me that rapid fire. I didn't eat it. I swear I didn't eat it. She'd grab me by the arm and take me to the mirror and there'd be chocolate all over my face. And I don't know how it got there. I am so grateful to Dr. Silkworth that said that my disease centers in my mind. Because at that young age, my head said, don't tell. Don't tell the truth. What you're getting right now is not going to be half as bad as what you're going to get if you tell them you did it. So I never told the truth. I was always lying. And you can tell I'm a Chicana. I should be from Santana, but no, we're from Orange. When I was 8 years old, they moved us to Mira Loma. I don't know if you know where Mira Loma is, but back in those days, it was just cow and country land. We had a 3-day weekend baptism, and I had my first 3-day blackout drunk when I was 8 years old. And I don't know about your first blackout, but you know how you go in a blackout and then you have a little glimpse? I remember them saying, put that kid to bed. And then I came to, it was Sunday, about 1 or 2 in the afternoon, walking on the side of the house, hearing them inside talking about me, about how drunk I had gotten and who had given me so much. And that was the first time I felt shame and remorse. I didn't know what I did, but I knew it was bad. I'm also a recovering Catholic, if there's any Catholics in here. But when I was young, they sent us to Catholic school. And the nuns, I went to Catholic school, and the nuns were always shaking me and putting paper in my mouth and putting my gum on my nose. They were so mean. And then, forget what I was doing, who knows what. But then they had this big old mural of God striking you down if you broke those 10 commandments. You know how... You know how it starts off, like, honor your mother and your father? When you're lying and you're cheating and you're manipulating and not telling the truth, you're not honoring them too well. You know, and when the things would happen in my house, my mother would say, Lorraine, Norma, who did this? I never did it. I never thought about the consequences and the payment that my sister had to endure from my lies. You see, because my mom just started wailing on us with that belt to see who did it. I never thought that about my sister taking the beating. Thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. I used to go out where the horses were and I'd sing to God to please bring me my daddy back, because when my daddy was around, my mother wasn't so violent. I used to think that everything would be wonderful. As a child, I always lived in a delusion of an illusion. If my daddy was here, everything would be wonderful. We'd have all this beautiful party and all this. Always in a delusion. And I used to look for my daddy and my good mommy. You see, when my mom would beat me, she'd feel remorse and guilt after she'd come. She'd hug me, talk, you know, mother talk, and stroke my hair and kiss on me. And she always told me that my daddy loved me a lot. She said, but you see, she said he was a sick man. You see, my mother always cleaned it up for my father, but she never cleaned it up for herself because she was an alcoholic. So I used to look for my daddy in the barn, in the cupboards where we hid the oats and the hay. I thought that someplace my daddy and my good mommy were gagged someplace, and I would find them and everything would be okay. When I didn't find him, I gave God the finger. I said, I am never going to pray to you again. And I meant it with everything I had. I said, your name will never pass my lips again. When I was 10 years old, my mother got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she moved us to Pomona, where the girls redded up their hair, wore tight skirts in the fifth grade, okay? And every day after school, they'd wait for me and my sister to give us our initiation. And I'd cry to the teachers, they're going to beat me up. You see, I never felt Mexican enough. You see, I didn't know how to speak Spanish then. I probably don't still speak good Spanish. But anyway, and I didn't have a burrito. All the girls had burritos. And my mother was an alcoholic. She didn't cook. I was raised on pot pies, TV dinners, and bologna sandwiches. My mother made beans one time and put spinach in it, okay? It was good. So I never felt Mexican enough. And on the last day of school, the guys and the girls, they cornered my sister and they were beating her up. And I saw her crying. I flagged some guy. He came and he got her out and he took us home. And that day when my mother got home, my sister started telling her what had happened. And my mother got all upset, and right away she called that school district. And she made sure my sister didn't go back to that school. And one more time, I didn't matter. And one more time, I wasn't loved because I had to go back to that school. And those girls would wait for me after school to give me my initiation. And now, my mother was a great AA-er. She went to meetings every single day from 7:30 to 10 o'clock. Mama was at the meetings. From 7:30 to 9:45, we had the boys over. We're doing spray paint, glue, whatever you got, we're doing. That's my drug of choice, whatever you got. Every now and then, Mama come home early and beat the heck out of the guys, too. I got in a lot of trouble. So my mother moves us to the other side of Pomona. You know, the book talks about seeking lower companions. I took 3 buses to get to the ghetto, the barrio. I was the best-dressed chola at the barrio. And not only that, but I was always a big shot, you see, because I got allowance, so I always paid for everything. And if you had a problem with some chick, I'd take care of it for you because I had a lot of suppressed anger and willing to share it. I went to Alateen as soon as I became 12 years old. Every time I got in trouble in school, Mama made me come to the meetings. I'd sit in the front row, listen to all those great stories, and go, wow, what an exciting life they had. Too bad they're old, they ain't got nowhere else to go, so they come to AA. I never liked Alcoholics Anonymous. My mother took us to picnics, potlucks, all the functions. I didn't care for AA. I'd get out of the car sometimes and go have something to eat, and some stranger would come up to me, and she'd say, are you Angie's daughter? And I'd say, yes. And then she'd ask me how that problem was at school. I go, why is my mother telling them my business? I was so resentful at Alcoholics Anonymous. My mother was so sweet when she was with you. When we would get yelling at, get yelled, and my mom was screaming and still violent, forget what I was doing. Forget that I was drinking. Forget of sneaking out and not behaving. I never took responsibility for my own action. We moved to Montclair, and I joined drill team. Montclair didn't have a ghetto. I joined drill team. You see, I can fit in with any kind of clique. The Socs, the Continentals, the surfers. I try to be a surfer. You can kind of see how that would make it with me. And I never was into bikers because I had that big hair. You know, I never did that. And but I joined drill team. And the cool thing in 69, 70 was smoking. If you smoked, you were cool. There was a designated girls' bathroom. And I went in there and smoked. And all the girls were talking about this guy. He's 6'3", blonde hair, blue eyes. All the girls wanted to be with him. He had a nice low rider and a car show. He had money, didn't go to school. I don't know about you ladies, but if everybody wants him, I gotta have him. So I marry this guy at 16. He introduces me to Boone's Farm, Apple Wine, and Reds. Woo! I thought I was violent before. As soon as I got that combination, I was off. I was a newlywed, and we went to a house party, and I was semi-passed out on my friend's shoulder. And he was going to go to the store to get some more booze. And when he's coming through the door, he's got the paper bag of booze. And some chick's coming through the door, and she's got a bag of booze, too. I look over there. I knew he was with her. There was a beer bottle by me. I picked it up and broke it on his face just in case. Shortly after that, I tried to kill him again. And the reason I hurt him is because I stole his custom car. I didn't have a driver's license yet, but I stole his car. He put his head in to get the keys. I smacked him on the head with this great bottle of apple wine, which is my favorite. And when he goes to the hospital and he gets out, his family sends him to Ontario, Canada. When I get out of juvenile hall, I say, I'm really going to kill this guy. Back in the day, this was rapid transit. I used to hitchhike, and so I hitchhiked, and I got as far as Columbus, Ohio. I want you to know there's no Mexicans in Columbus, Ohio. But I'll tell you what, I started drinking, I started partying, I forgot what my primary purpose was, right? And it was during the holidays, and I had called my house for Christmas to talk to my mother, and my stepdad told me my mom had contemplated suicide. She was 5 or 6 years sober, and I came back. Like I told you, I've been to hundreds and hundreds of AA meetings. I went to Alateen, and when I came back, I said, you know, I got to get rid of that Boone's Farm and Apple Wine. That stuff makes me too violent. I know what I need. I need to get myself a job and buy myself a car. You know, I never read chapter 3. And my life is all about chapter 3. I will do anything to not be an alcoholic. So I got a job. I buy myself a 64 Chevy with a big steering wheel. But I put a little 6-inch because I can't see over the top. We moved back to Orange. I'm claiming Ontario as my hood. You see, before I just drank Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and then it came to Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Wednesday. And you see, when the normies drink, they're having a good time, and they drink to enhance the good time. And an alcoholic of my variety drinks for the good time. You see, when I'm getting ready to go out, I'm drinking. When I'm putting that war paint on, I'm drinking. Drinking the shower? Absolutely. Yeah. You know, we used to wear that big old hairdo. I used to wear the line from the tip of my nose to my hairline and around, wear those big old eyelashes on the top and on the bottom, wear those hot pants, and cruise on over to Ontario. My drug of choice was 151 Bacardi and RC Cola. If it didn't burn, it wasn't good. We'd go over to Ontario, we'd beat up the girls from out of town, you know, the girls from Chino. And the next day, we'd go look for our hair where they pulled it out, right? No, I did this every single weekend. On Sundays, but the normies call it Monday, I'd be going home. And when I get home, you know, I have to drop some black beauties or some whites, you know, so I could hear the alarm. I didn't want my mom to think I was an alcoholic. And it seems like I just barely fall asleep and the alarm would go. And the alarm would go off and I'd have the shakes and that taste in my mouth. So got to go to the bathroom, brush my teeth, but just do a little quickie because it makes me gag. And you know I'm reeking of that 151. So I just add a little extra perfume, go to work, drop some wintergreen lifesavers, and nobody will notice. I get to work and I say, tonight it's going to be different. Tonight I'm not calling the girls. Tonight I'm going to get some rest. And I'm saying that all day long. I always took white or black beauties so I could get through the day. I never considered myself a daily drinker, but every day when the guys were going to go get a Kawama, a 40-ouncer, I was in the car. You see, but I didn't think beer counted. You see, I was an adult now. I was drinking 151. You know, and I remember one time one of my mom's friends, who has passed away, her name was Irish Annie. And she said, Norma, are you having a problem with alcohol? And I said, heck no, I'm not having a problem with alcohol. I'm having fun. You see, I am not an alcoholic. I'm just having a good time. So what happened is got into trouble in Ontario, and my cousin invited me over to his in-law's anniversary party. And he said I could have one drink. So I had a 10-ounce shot of whiskey. That little normies, that little shot they give you, those are for the normies. I need a 10-ounce. If I get one, I want a 10-ounce straight shot of whiskey. And I blacked out. And the next day, my cousin's wife, who didn't drink that night, came over and said I had been all over a cousin of mine, that I'd been stroking on his lap and I just cringed at the idea that I would be even near him because I hated him. And I hated him because when I was a kid, I always thought he wanted to molest me. He would call me over. He would try to rub up against me. He had that. He scared me. And when she said I did that, I swore off again. I've been to lots of meetings. I've heard some stuff. I swore off again. So what I started doing is I decided to go back to college and broaden my horizon, like the book says. So I start jogging 7-10 miles a day. I didn't even know it said that. I moved into a reborn furnished apartment. I'm not drinking, so I'm not violent. Just smoke a little weed. You know weed ain't bad. You know it's natural and comes from the dirt, God-given, right? Just smoke a little weed and take a hard class like political science. I can't remember how many houses in the Senate and how many congressional whatever. And so I'm all tensed up. I've been studying all night, so I smoke a joint so I can relax. Get to class, put my name on the paper, and read the same sentence over and over. Get an F. Next semester, same seat, same instructor, same grade notes. Never miss a day in class, same behavior. I took that class 4 semesters in a row. Same seat, same instructor, never missed a day in class. And on the last day of school, I said, I know what the problem is. The problem is I'm stupid. My mother always said I was stupid, and I always believed her. What happened is that night, my girlfriend brought these two guys over to my furnished apartment, and I had a shot of tequila. Remember, I haven't drank in 3 years. I had a shot of tequila. Then it was 2 pints of tequila. And I don't know why alcohol enhances all my resentments. But she asked one of the guys where he lived, and he said he lived by the Orange Circle. My mother lived by the Orange Circle. There was a baseball bat by me, picked up the bat, destroyed the furnished apartment, got in a physical confrontation with my girlfriend. The guys left. I bit her nipple, destroyed the apartment. The cops came, got in a physical confrontation with the cops, ran out the door, knocked on the landlady's door and said, "Pray for me as they're taking me to jail." When I came to in jail and they let me out, my arrogance said, I got one over on them. They knew they were wrong. They came into my apartment. You know how your head goes? My head was going. The truth of the matter is they beat me up. I had a big old black eye. I was missing my hair. I didn't have any shoes. My knives were all done. And a nice bus driver let me on the bus. And I swore off again. That feeling of self-loathing showed up again. And I swore off again. What I did is I switched to a little social heroin. You know heroin don't say social very long? And after that quit working, I switched to a little cocaine. Inevitably, everything stopped working. Inevitably, I put everything in a shopping cart. And that began my life of living on the streets. You know, the book calls it pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I can barely pronounce those words. But I am going to tell you what it is to live it. It is the hardest part of my story to talk about because I relive it as I tell you. You see, I put all my things in a shopping cart and I would walk those streets with my things and sleep in people's garages and in little spots. I never sold my body out there because I didn't think anybody would buy it. I plucked all my eyebrows out, all my eyelashes out. I kept seeing bugs. I suffered from a lot of DTs. I'd see the bugs going up my eyes, and I'd try to kill them with the tweezers. And I had a big old bald spot in the back of my hair. I wore a size 7 little girls, and I weighed 76 pounds. And I didn't think that there was anything wrong with that life because one day at a time, that life became the normal. I know what it is to yearn for oatmeal and warm toast and get on those free eating lines, be the first one in line, and those sweet people who donate their time are putting the food out, and I'm the first one. And as soon as I get there, I get cold toast, and I start yelling and screaming at them. You can tell I have a big mouth. And they'd 86 me from the Salvation Army eating lines. I always felt like a victim. I always knew I was never going to get out of the life. I went to jail lots and lots of time. This tastes like jail water. I made lots of trips to the county jail. I'm the only one that I know that would cry when it was time to leave. You know why? Because I didn't want to do it anymore. I didn't want to go back out there. Every now and then I'd call my mother. And my mother was a great AA-er. And she'd say, "How are you, mijita?" And I'd always say, "Fine, Mom. I'm fine." You know, and she would try to help me. She never suggested a recovery home because I wouldn't go. When I went to jail, the judge would suggest a recovery home, and I'd say, "Give me my time." I always wanted to go to prison, you know, because all my friends were going to prison. You see, I'm the kind of person, I'm institutionalized no matter where I go. What happened for me is, you know, I am one of those people that you see walking on the streets with layers and layers of clothes on and smell like a wet dog and try to show you their bugs. "Can you see that? Can you see that?" And you'd step away from me. I'd ask for you for a quarter because that's all I thought I could get. On this one particular day, I was in jail and my girlfriend was going to go to prison, my crime partner, and she said, "You better call your mother and ask her for some help." Now, I have called my mother many, many, many times, and she was like too through with me. She said, "For God's sake, Norma, I'm making dinner for Johnny Harris. If you want to get sober, you write to this place in Indio." And I have never heard of Indio. But she said she was going to send me to the best recovery home that she knew. I went around that jail saying, "I'm going to Betty Ford. I'm going to be signing in money with Elizabeth Taylor." Because that's when Elizabeth Taylor was doing those trips. "I got to be a cut up. I don't care if I'm in jail or pushing the cart. You know, I'm better." And so, you know, this is a trippy part of my story. You know, when you go to jail, they give you an early kick. That means they let you out at 2 or 3 in the morning. Why do they let criminals out at 2 or 3 in the morning? They let me out at 2 or 3 in the morning. I have a phone number I'm supposed to call. But my friends in the Sallyport are going to go get cookies. And anybody that knows me, I love me some sweets. And so I'm going with them to the liquor store. And then I get that feeling. I get that feeling of impending doom. I get that feeling of, now what's going to happen to me? That dark feeling, that despair feeling. And I run back to the jail, and I call that lady. She picks me up, takes me as far as Riverside, and my mother picks me up in Riverside. And she has that conversation some of you might have with the ones you love. She said, Norma, give yourself a break. This can be the last time you ever go through this. I have stopped so many times. Every time I was in jail, I'd swear off, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to get a job. I'm going to do this. But I owe me one. I just owe me one because I've been down 6 months. I owe me one. One ain't going to hurt. Then that vicious cycle would start all over again. So when she was saying that, I go, yeah. And then I'm shrinking and she's lecturing. Who knows what she was saying? You know, mothers. We get out to Indio. I don't know if you guys have been to Indio, but it's all sand and tumbleweeds. I don't even know where the heck we are. It's in the middle of the night. We get to Indio. We get in front of the ABC Club. If anybody knows the old ABC Club, the lights are all off, so we roll around down the alley. On one side of the alley is a shooting gallery. You know what a shooting gallery is, right? It's a broken-down old house with no windows, no electricity, trash, urine, feces, and that's home. The other side of the alley is four cats. Everybody knows what cats means. It means mice. I go, shoot, I got loaded in better places than this. Because you see, my head, my disease is in my mind, and it's always talking. And I said, what was I thinking? Who can I call? You know, there was nobody to call. The only person I called just took off and left me there. And then here, bigger than hoot nanny, here comes this old lady down the steps, as I remember it. And she tells me to sleep on the couch and don't use the phone. You know, all night I'm thinking, who can I call? Somebody get me out of here. But there was nobody. There was absolutely nobody. And in the morning, when that sweet woman who has also passed away, she did my intake. And she asked that question you're not supposed to ask arrogant people. She asked me what my drug of choice was. And I said, heroin. And she said, did you ever use alcohol? And I said, yes. And she said, can you see how your alcoholism led you to try other things? And I believe that that was my first moment of clarity. I said, yes. She goes, therefore, we get a sponsor and we work the steps. I got a sponsor who had 27 years of sobriety. I wanted someone that knew more than my mother. Yeah? My mother had 23 and a half years. My sister had 8, and I didn't want a day they had. You see, because when I came here with every single resentment fresh on my mind. Every case I ever built, how I wasn't enough, fresh on my mind. And when I came, I've been around AA a long time. They used to say, if you're under 30 days, you don't know how to stay sober, don't talk, just say your name and pass. So the first 30 days in that recovery room, I said, nada. I said, my name is Norma, I'm an alcoholic, pass. When I had 30 days in the house, they let me go to my first outside meeting. And the only Chicana in Indio, in my mind, took me to a woman's stag meeting in Palm Springs. And in this meeting, they had tablecloths. They had china dishes. And there was a lady named Arlene Manuel that was sitting there telling a joke to her sponsee using page 96. about if your prospect, you know, regarding a boyfriend. And everybody was laughing and carrying on. And I felt so empty, so lonely. It says, we are people who would not mix. Look around us. And I said, no, I don't mix with none of these people. Because inside, I still felt empty, lonely, and not a part of. So as the meeting's going on, this only Chicana, she gets up, she gets the coffee pot, and she starts serving the coffee. Newcomer, if your head's anything like mine, mine says, they make the Mexican serve the coffee here. So after the meeting, she's taking me home to the recovery home, and I have to tell her, I have to say something. I go, what, Esther, we have to serve the coffee? And she looks at me like if I wet the floor. She goes, no, Norma. She goes, I do it because I love them. I do it because it makes me a part of. It makes me feel good inside to do it for them. And she taught me about service. I was in that recovery home for, I think, 60 days, 90 days, and the director asked me to go talk to a newcomer. I go, what can I tell him? I've only been here 90 days. He said, you've been here 90 days more than him. So I went there and I started, he goes, tell him why you're here and how you got here and what's happening. So I went, and it made me feel so good. You see, being in that recovery house, I felt good. They drink and use just like me, and we're trying to be sober. And then this guy got up to the podium during one of the groups, and he said, he was talking to us ladies. He goes, you ladies are really going to get to know yourself. And inside I'm saying, what? I already know me? And then I started like shaky because, you know, I didn't want to know me. I was scared to know and to discard all the things I knew. But then he said the magical number. He said he'd been sober 6 months. He was sober 6 months. I knew nobody my age sober 6 months in freedom without bars or locks. I didn't know anybody. And he got my attention. So I started working my steps. I'm institutionalized. I did what all the other penguins in that recovery home did. They got a sponsor. They worked the steps. We talked about the book. We did all that stuff. When I was 9 months sober, no. On November 27th of 1989 was the day after Thanksgiving. I was 8 months sober. And I got to have a part-time job in that recovery home. And I worked at a hardware store. And the assistant manager asked me to remove some artificial Christmas trees off out of the attic. Now, I've never been in an attic, but I have a big mouth. And I'm saying, why are you taking me? Why don't you take one of the guys? I'm the only chick. I'm going up the stairs all resentful. And he says, just get those Christmas trees. I get those trees and I'm resentful. As I get further and further into the attic, he never told me to stay on the beam. I've never been in an attic. I went from 76 pounds to 150 to tutu in 4 months. It's called long gut. You just eat, eat, eat. So when I took a step, I took a trip. And I fell 2 stories. And I squeezed through this little hole, and I slammed into those metal shelves, and it sprung me out again, and I slammed out again. And I landed on my feet both times. And I didn't even break anything. Just a few teeth, but they were probably on the rot anyway. But what I got that day beyond a shadow of a doubt, as I stand here before you, I got that day that God had a plan for my life. And as they're taking me in the ambulance and they're doing all those things that they do in the ambulance, I knew that God had a purpose for me. I took God from my head to my heart. I told you I kicked God out. And you know in recovery homes they say crazy things like get a doorknob as your higher power. I'm not getting no doorknob. I got the wind as my God. You see, because I could see the tree move, but I couldn't see what moved that tree. I could see the sand stir because Indio is very sandy and it stirs. So every time it touched my face, I said, please keep me sober today. And the nighttime, I said, thank you. And that's one day at a time is how I built a relationship with my higher power through working the steps. I got done with all my steps when I was 9 months, and I got to be a sponsor. 10 minutes. Holy moly. Okay, so then I moved. I had 7 affairs my first year and a half of sobriety. It'd been a long time since anybody noticed me. It is the attraction and not the promotion. I moved back to L.A. and I stopped going. I didn't go to any meetings for 10 days. And then I started cruising the old neighborhood. And then I got scared. And I went to 9604. And I didn't care where I went. I just went to a meeting. And I started going to meetings because if I don't go to meetings, that I could do it again. When I was 16 months sober, my grandmother that I loved and I adored, she died. And I got mad at my sober God. And I said, take my mama, take my sister, 2 for 1, but give me my God. Give me my grandma back. You see, I wasn't done loving on her. I wasn't done sharing her with the things you were teaching me here. I was so upset. But when God takes something away, He always replaces it with something else, you see. I had to pick up the paper and the pen, and I had to write 5 more inventories on my mother and my sister so I could let them off my expectation hook. You see, because it's my expectation, my idea how she should be loving me, treating me, giving me. And I'm measuring it how, by what she's doing for you. And what it did is it let me let her off the hook. I got to build a relationship with my father that I loved and I adored. I remember I wanted to send him a Father's Day card, and I was going through the Father's Day thing, and I called my mother, and I go, Mom, there isn't a single Father's Day card for my dad. They all say what a good daddy you were, blah, 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 blah. And then I found a cute little card. I found one, thank you, Mom, for being a great father, and I sent that to my mom instead. So the next year rolled around, and I want to send my father a Father's Day card. And my mother said, send him a Father's Day card as if he was all those things. Give it to him so he could feel good. Give it to him to let him off the hook for his stuff. And I started building a relationship with my father. I had the privilege of putting my father's things together and burying my father in the VA. And I didn't do any of it alone. One of the ladies I sponsored went with me because it was the hardest thing there was to do. I've had many, many gifts in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I believe that God looks at my defects of character like when you have a little baby puppy. You know those cute little puppies you hold right here? They're so little, they grunt and smell like bologna. They go, do they? They're so darn cute, and you give them lots of baby kisses. And in the nighttime, you make them a little place to sleep with a little blankie on the floor. And in the morning when you come, he's made little tiny baby poo-poo and slams his foot in it. Don't they? You know why? Because they can't move fast enough. You don't beat the dog. You just clean up the little poo-poo and you love on him and you send him on his way. And that's how I think that God looks at my defects of character. Because without them, I will not change and I will not grow. If it comes easy, I take it for granted. A year and a half ago, I got engaged. And then it came to me. I think I'm married. I think I married somebody. I went on the internet to look if I was married. I found out this last November I've been married 30 years. I was not laughing when I saw that on the computer. When I saw that on the computer, self-hatred, self-loathing, self-pity showed up. What do we do with that? I wrote an inventory. I called my sponsor. She gave me direction. And every time I talked about it and people would laugh, I'd hate. And the hatred was for me. You see, I have to let myself off the hook. I have done many, many things that I can't rectify. But I can rectify this one day at a time and the help of an attorney. And I have a beautiful relationship with my mother and my sister one day at a time. lots of inventories. You know, I spoil my sister rotten and I spoil my mother rotten because I only have today. I don't want to hurt anybody I love anymore. You know, and I owe so much. You know, I've gotten to live two lifestyles in one lifetime, and I never did a good deed to deserve it. It's all been a gift for free and for fun. And I know I'm not going to do it the way you think I should do it. I'm probably not going to do it as good as I could do it. But I thank God I'm not doing it like I used to do it. Thank you.